Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. There's the attendance sheet. Thank you. Welcome to the fifth day of our Brihad Bhagavatamrita course. We are going through chapter 5. Dear devotees, you may have noted that the different chapters, the headings are very brief, but they are important. First of all, earthly, then heavenly, then beyond material nature in the third chapter. And fourth chapter is the first one, says devotee. Yeah. So, we're coming to the level, we've come to the level of pure devotional service, basically, in chapter 4. Now, chapter 5 is titled Dia. Amongst the pure devotees, there are pure devotees on different levels. Prahlad, of course, is one. Then Hanuman is higher, but on a more intimate level, where there's more real affection and more depth in terms of the personal relationship and the personal feelings and attitudes, that is there with the Pandavas more. Amongst the devotees, they are particularly dear. Their relationship is very close and not just bound by the formalities of being the servant of the master, as in the case of Hanuman, but based actually more on a mood of pure love and appreciation on that level. So this we'll see as we go through chapter 5, how the Pandavas, their relationship with Krishna is more intimate. And in fact, not always, but many times, they actually lose sight of the fact that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they think he's their friend, their well-wisher, charioteer, advisor, just in terms of the relationship, the direct personal relationship, without necessarily the fact that he is God having any real bearing on the way they see him, the way they deal with him. So in this way, they are considered dear, as opposed to simply being devoted in a formal sense. So Narada Muni arrives dancing in Hastinapur. Every time he goes to the next place, he becomes happier. Yes, he gets more excited and ecstatic. So he arrives dancing. He's dancing as he arrives. And he races into Hastinapur. There he sees Maharaj Yudhisthira is there, surrounded by his brothers, the other four Pandavas. And they're having a big discussion. In fact, it is mentioned there in point 1 of your study guide on page 10. They are discussing, how are we going to get Krishna here? We are not in danger, so it is not that he would necessarily feel he has to come to deliver us. So maybe we can just fabricate some danger. just make up a story that we're being attacked by some demons. Or maybe we'll tell him we're having some big sacrifice because when they had the Rajasuya sacrifice, then Krishna came. He was not intending coming. In fact, there was an obstacle. That was that right at that moment when he received the invitation to the Rajasuya, the necessity to deal with Jarasandha arose. That, in fact, we'll talk a little bit more about when we move on to Dwaraka and we meet Uddhava. But the point was, in this regard at least, that they had this big sacrifice, and even though Krishna had other pressing business, he still came to Hastinapur to take part in the sacrifice. So they're thinking, let's just have another big sacrifice. What for? Anything. Just to get Krishna here. Let's just do it. So this big meeting was going on. We've got to get Krishna to come back by hook or by crook somehow. So Maharaj Yudhisthira and all the Pandavas and their relatives and friends and ministers and everyone, they saw Narada Muni come in. They all stood up to receive him. Very famous transcendentalist, saintly person. Maharaj Yudhisthira brought him in, sat him down, and then, just like Prahlad had done, they got out all the items for worship. Arati paraphernalia, foot bathing paraphernalia, and various other paraphernalias for receiving a highly respected guest. Narada grabbed everything and started worshipping them. And he wouldn't give them the paraphernalia. Yes, he just got completely into the mood and started glorifying them. That you are the recipients of the greatest mercy of the Lord. You are the greatest devotees. I'm so happy to be here with you. So, right at the beginning of describing why he considers them to be so fortunate, right at the beginning, he introduces this main point, really. It is what everything else, or so many of the other points, boil down to, that they have a very intimate relationship with Krishna. He is their dearest friend. He is their relative. He's their cousin. He's their charioteer. He gives them advice. And he's also their God and their spiritual master. But there's more mention made about the more intimate connections, friendly, very personal connections, just based on the loving relationship, personal relationship, the personal interactions they have, and their personal feelings, not just the fact that he is God, and therefore naturally they have to respect him. So then Narada Muni, what he does, before having made that point, but before he goes into so much of the details of their personal qualifications and things like this, he establishes an important point in some detail. That he makes the point that their Krishna is not the same exactly as the other forms of the Lord who the other devotees have relationships with. This is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. His position is more significant than, for example, Lord Vamana, who was related with Indra, or the Mahapurusha, who was connected with Lord Brahma, or Lord Nrisingadev, or Lord Ramachandra even. This Lord Krishna, he is special. And they are special. The Pandavas are special because they are connected with that special, most special, unique, one and only original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. He is the source of all the avatars. All the others, they're just like little, small parts, minor, his minute parts. The demigods, they're just little sparks of his splendor. And he is such a person that even the demigods, despite the fact that like Indra has a connection with Vamana, despite the fact that Brahma is connected with the Mahapurusha, but when they all went to the ocean of milk 5,000 years ago, when Kamsa and his friends were creating their disturbances, but they appealed to the Supreme Lord, but he wouldn't even reveal himself to them. He just spoke to Brahma through the heart. And he, that is of course Vishnu, he is not even on the same level as Krishna, who the Pandavas have this intimate relationship with. Yes. So simply the fact that they are connected with Krishna himself is a very important sign of the fact that they have the special good fortune that none of the other devotees who Narada has met so far, that they have. So he's special in many ways. Narada makes a very important point. It's a very interesting point and very important point, which actually Jiva Goswami talks about in Krishna Sandarbha. That when the Lord appeared in other forms, then he only gave liberation to a few people. This is now leaving out Lord Ram. But if we include everyone else, and even Lord Nrisingha, he's there, but he's also a little special like Ram. So you could even leave Lord Nrisingha out. But all the other forms of the Lord, when they appeared, they only gave impersonal liberation to a few people. But many, even many of the demons they killed, did not get liberation, like Kala Nemi. Kala Nemi was killed by the Lord, but he then took birth again as Kamsa. Or Hiranyakashipu himself. He was killed by the Lord, but he took birth again as Ravan. And Hiranyaksha, he was killed by Varaha, he took birth again as Kumbhakarna. And then again, as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, they were killed again, but they didn't get liberation. So, of course they were killed by Lord Ram. But anyway, the point generally is that it's quite rare that people are given liberation by other forms of the Lord. And it was really only Prahlad was the first person to be given devotional service by one of the avatars. This is how Narada Muni explains, at least. And he got it from Lord Nrisingadev, who's a little special. Then during the time, during the appearance of Lord Ram, a few devotees got pure devotional service, but not on the level of prema, or at least not on the level of Krishna prema, like the Pandavas have, that intimate, loving ecstasy of prema on that level. So a few of the devotees, they came to the level of pure devotional service, like Hanuman, like Jambavan, like Guha, the hunter, Dasarath, Vibhisan, Sugriva. They came to the level of pure devotional service. But Narada says that, as far as, whereas Krishna is concerned, so many people got prema, even on the highest levels. And even in some cases, demons fit for hell got prema, like Putana. She became a nurse in Goloka Vrindavan. Like Agasura, he became a resident of Vaikuntha. So many people got prema. Even people like Vishvamitra and Vasishta, they were connected with Lord Ram. In fact, they're extremely prominent in the pastimes of Lord Ram. But they didn't even, when it came to being connected with Lord Ram, they didn't even come to the level of pure devotional service then. They remained attached to sort of, you know, certain fruitive considerations, some ideas of liberation, and some mystical powers, stuff like that. But when they saw Krishna, they came to Kurukshetra. They were so struck. They approached Krishna and asked him, "Can we have devotional service?" So then they became real devotees. I mean, they were already devotees, but they were like mixed devotees. They specifically requested Krishna for pure devotional service because they were so inspired by Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is so special. He is unique, the original Supreme Lord, and therefore his beauty, his charm, his pastimes, and his pastime places, his personal qualities and virtues, the way that he reciprocates with people, all of these things are outstanding. None of the other forms of the Lord, even Lord Ram, can compare with Krishna at all. Very big difference, actually. Very big difference. And these Pandavas, they have such a close relationship with this form of the Lord. So just see how special they must be. Just like you may have heard the story, when the gopis were separated from Krishna during the Rasa dance, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, they were looking frantically. In fact, they became mad and started asking the trees and the animals, which way did Krishna go? So Lord Narayan, he became compassionate. These poor girls, they're so sincere, they're so dedicated, such nice devotees, but they're in such anxiety this is terrible. Let me go, and I will appear before them, he thought. I will put two of my arms behind my back, and I will play a flute. Because he's very expert. He can also play a flute when he wants to. In fact, we will find out when we go to Vaikuntha with Gopakumar in a couple of weeks or so. We will find out that Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, he sometimes dresses up like Krishna and plays the flute and herds cows. And therefore, some of the people there, they think that Krishna is just a Leela avatar of Lord Narayan. Anyway, that's another story. But Lord Narayan can play the flute. That is the point here. So he thought, I can play the flute quite well. And I look like Krishna. So I'll go down and I will pacify the gopis and they'll feel happy being connected with me. So he went down and he stood right in the way as they were coming with the flute and his two other arms behind his back. But the gopis, Krishna is so special. And the gopis are the ultimate connoisseurs in Krishna. Immediately they knew this is not Krishna. They didn't have to figure it out and check him out and take some time. Immediately they knew this is not Krishna, this is Lord Narayan. So they just immediately said, Om Namo Narayanaya. We offer our obeisances to Narayan, to you, Narayan. Very respectfully and bowed down. And then, with great intensity, they approached him, went right up to him and said, can you tell us where is Krishna? And the impact of that on Lord Narayan was so overwhelming. He just became bewildered. His other two hands came out. He dropped the flute. And just, you know, the intensity of the gopis approaching him. So he said, I think he went this way. And then with his forearms, he started indicating all different directions. And they said, thank you very much, Lord Narayan, and just went off somewhere. Yes. So Krishna, the person, he is so unique and so special. He is not just a bit better. Like we read in Nectar of Devotion, there are 64 qualities of the Lord. He has all of them. Lord Narayan has 60. So that means Lord Narayan has more than 90%. That's pretty good. 90-something percent. That's very high. It's almost complete. But it is not that the difference in terms of beauty, pastimes, loving relationships, and everything, actually. It is not that the difference between Narayan and Krishna is only 10%. There's a very big difference. Yes. And he is just quite unique and outstanding. So, this is Krishna. And this is the form of the Lord that the Pandavas are connected to. So they must be uniquely special also. They must be. So that is his first sort of line of argument to the Pandavas. And of course, the Pandavas are agreeing. Yes, Krishna, he is like this. It's true. He is so wonderful. He is so great. He is so beautiful. Then Narada says, and he loves no one like he loves you. So then they said, you know, why did you have to say that? Yeah. Narada was so ecstatic describing the glories of Krishna. He felt his tongue was sort of getting too carried away. He tried to hold his tongue. He couldn't. So he tried to bite his tongue. And he lectured his tongue that you are too busy. You will lose control. Then he said, actually, it is all right. You can carry on. Glorifying the Lord. So then he started glorifying the Pandavas. No one loves the Lord like you. No one loves... The Lord loves no one like he loves you. And the mercy that he gives you is unlike the mercy that he gives anyone. So you are the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy. Then he gives a whole lot of examples. There are many examples. Even the first one, actually, I don't even know the story, but he says that Akrura told Kunti Devi one time something he'd heard about Krishna. And with the first sentence, she became totally overwhelmed with the topmost symptoms of Krishna prema, just collapsed and completely overwhelmed with one sentence. Then Kunti, she's the mother of the Pandavas, she looked after the Pandavas very nicely, but only because they were dear to the Lord. She looked after them with great care. She underwent extreme difficulty for the Pandavas because they were so dear to Krishna. Then Krishna, one time, Krishna wanted to leave Hastinapur. She asked him not to, and he felt he couldn't, and he didn't. This, of course, is there in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the prayers of Queen Kunti. So Narada explains that you are so great that you control the Lord. And he gives this as an example. Kunti stopped Krishna. He was already in the chariot. And it was not just like, you know, if we go somewhere, we're kind of insignificant, so we go in one car. Krishna had this huge entourage to return to Dwarka with. He was already on the chariot. And she appealed, no, you please stay. So he stayed another 2 or 3 months because she requested. Krishna allowed Maharaj Yudhisthira to do the Rajasuya sacrifice. And he let Bhima kill Jarasandha. In this way, the two of them became famous throughout the universe. Because the Rajasuya sacrifice can normally only be done by very great personalities, generally demigods. And Jarasandha was so powerful that he had defeated some of the demigods. So by allowing Yudhisthira to do that sacrifice and allowing Bhima to kill Jarasandha, he increased their fame throughout the entire universe. Krishna used to call Draupadi my dear friend. And he sanctified her hair during that Rajasuya sacrifice. He personally sanctified her hair with sanctified water from the sacrifice. Then Vidura, who is their one of their uncles. Uncle? Anyway, something like that. Yeah. Vidura, there are different versions. Here he says, they accepted his porridge. There are other stories about banana skins and things like that. But here, there's an account of how Lord Krishna went to Hastinapur and met Duryodhana, who invited him for a royal feast, and he met Vidura, who invited him at the same time, to come at the same time, to eat some prasadam of some sort. Vidura was very poor. He only had some porridge. Now, do many of you know what porridge is like? It is really, unless you've been, anyway, it is really not very exciting. It's not very exciting. It may be a little tamagun. Anyway, it is not very exciting, put it that way. Of course, you can sort of jazz it up a bit, I suppose. But he had very simple porridge because he was very poor. But Krishna relished it. Instead of going for the big royal feast, he relished the porridge. And when Bhishma was dying, Krishna personally took everyone there to be with him, to personally be with him himself, and, you know, like that, just to focus everyone on Bhishma. And then after he passed away, Krishna personally organized the funeral of Bhishma, personally. So he's a relative of the Pandavas. Then he makes an interesting point. When Prahlad was given mercy by the Lord, he received it with his grandson Bali. When Hanuman got his mercy, he got it alone. But the Pandavas, they have got their mercy with their entire family and all their ministers and subordinates and servants and assistants and everyone. They all got the special mercy of becoming intimately connected in loving relationships, very affectionate and intimate loving relationships with Krishna. So, Hanuman was the last person. But it seems the Pandavas, they got a lot more mercy. Once, Krishna said, Duryodhana, the story goes, it's in the Mahabharata, Duryodhana was saying how he hated the Pandavas. He was insulting the Pandavas and saying he wanted to kill them. Krishna said, you better watch out or I'll kill you. Duryodhana said, but I didn't say anything against you. It's the Pandavas who I don't like. So Krishna said, a friend of the Pandavas is a friend of mine, and one of their enemies is my enemy. They are my very life heirs. Yes. So you see the very close connection. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, the senior brother of the Pandavas, he thought, Narada Muni is teasing us. He is giving us a hard time. He said, I cannot remember Krishna showing us any mercy at all. Because if even some ordinary materialist saw what we went through, even though Krishna was nearby, even though sometimes he would come and visit us when we are in exile. If even an ordinary materialist saw what we went through, then if they had even the slightest faith and inclination to serve the Lord, they would just give it up. They would lose it. And he says that I feel very bad about this because I'm fully dedicated to the Lord. Not that he feels that, oh, we had a hard time, Krishna let us have a hard time, he didn't intervene. Not like that. He is feeling that I am so dedicated to the Lord. I want everyone to appreciate the Lord. I want everyone to take shelter of him. But unfortunately, all these things we went through, they're going to put people off. And they're not going to become devotees. And that disturbs me. So therefore, I don't think that we got mercy there. So, he says, just to show the people in general that Krishna is merciful to his devotees, I performed the Rajasuya sacrifice in order to get huge material gain, just so the non-devotees would see that a devotee of Krishna, it benefits through his connection with Krishna, by the mercy of Krishna, and therefore they may become interested in surrendering to Krishna also. You understand the logic that he's applying here? Yeah. He wants Krishna to be accepted by everyone, but he thinks everyone is not going to accept Krishna when they see what he and his brothers went through. Now, following the battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhisthira says, our grief has simply increased. All our enemies are dead. We have the kingdom, but our grief has simply increased. Because our respectable elders like Bhishma and Drona, they're all dead. Our beloved children like Abhimanyu and the five sons of Draupadi, they're all dead. So, our grief has just increased. Being deprived of their association is worse than dying. It would have been better if we'd died rather than win the kingdom. And on top of that, now Krishna has left us and he's living in Dwarka. We hardly see him. And as you can see here, we're trying to figure out some way to get him to come. So our position is very bad. And there is no mercy. From time to time, he'd carry messages for us or drive a chariot for us previously. But that was just to protect us, so that our religious principles wouldn't become compromised. So then Bhima speaks up. Now, interesting point. According to this description, it appears Bhima has a little more intimate connection with Krishna. It may be. It's definitely made clear with Arjuna, who is going to be the next one after Bhima, that he definitely has a more intimate connection with Krishna than Bhima, Arjuna. So Bhima, he was so close to Krishna that when he was listening to Narada Muni, he thought he could detect some faults in Narada's character, which he had picked up from having too much association with Krishna. particularly the fault of word jugglery. Yes, he knew Krishna very well. So he said that you are doing this now. You have spent too much time with Krishna. You have learnt word jugglery, and you are doing that now. He said, actually, Krishna is the guru of all clever deceivers and the original source of all illusion. This is Krishna. So don't have faith in any of the crafty things he may say. He has different motives. Sometimes he acts for his personal enjoyment. Sometimes he manufactures situations just for the sake of curiosity, to just see what will happen. Sometimes he makes things happen just to amuse himself. Sometimes he does things intentionally to bewilder his devotees. In any case, his motive is never simple affection. Never. There's always some ulterior motive behind whatever he does and whatever he says. The games he plays are not real, even. So Arjuna then sighs and disagrees with Bhima a little. He says, no, actually Krishna has given us mercy. But that mercy has become the source of our sorrow. Yes. So he's not saying that it was just a pretense, like Bhima was saying, that Krishna is not really merciful to us. But sometimes, you know, for different reasons, maybe, you know, like with the gopis, he just wanted to see what happened to them when he went away from them or something. So Arjuna's saying, no, it's not really a pretense. There is some mercy, but the results are all wrong. The results are all wrong. So then he gives some examples. He says, I had to tolerate seeing Bhishma and others attack Krishna. Bhishma and others, they became confused. Bhishma thought that Krishna, he's the absolute truth. He won't feel any pain. So I can attack him. It's no problem. And this is because he's a mental speculator. He's more a jnani type. And then others, or Bhishma also and others, they thought that we are kshatriyas. We have to fight. Even if it's with our own family members. Even if it's with Krishna, who's our family member. Because we're kshatriyas, we have to fight with him. So Arjuna says that I had to tolerate seeing these confused people attack and cause pain to my Lord Krishna. And I had to see that because he mercifully said that his devotee never perishes, and therefore he was willing to protect me. That was his mercy. Arjuna is agreeing. This was Krishna's mercy, that he was willing to protect his devotee. But he says, on the basis of that mercy, I had to tolerate seeing Krishna being attacked and being hurt, particularly by Bhishma. I had to see those arrows strike Krishna's body, and I had to see his body bleed. So it was his mercy, but the result was contrary. The result was suffering. Because Krishna's body is more dear to Arjuna than his own body, he would have rather just put himself in the way there and accepted those arrows. And Sanatan Goswami, he makes a very interesting comment that the blood of Krishna was actually his perspiration. Not because he was tired, but perspiration as a symptom of ecstasy. This is what he says. Anyway, other people say other things too. So then Arjuna says that I had to try to convince Krishna not to fight. He promised to protect me. That was his mercy. But then I had to convince him not to fight, and I had to physically try to restrain him. So again, in a similar context, but it's a slightly different example, his mercy became the source of my suffering. There's a famous picture of Krishna dragging Arjuna behind him. Arjuna is holding on to one of his legs, but Krishna is going towards Bhishma with the wheel of the chariot. So it's his mercy, but it's causing anxiety to Arjuna. That even though Krishna may have been trying to help, in other words, in terms of his own attitude, he may have been displaying an attitude of compassion and mercy. But if the actual activity causes pain to the dear one, then what is the compassion? What is the mercy? It is not really such. It's kind of misguided. Then he says that Krishna spoke these words to me before the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita before the battle. I thought he was going to tell me about devotional service, but he only spoke some dry speculation just to convince me to kill my elders. What sort of mercy was that? Anyway, the Sanatan Goswami explains that actually Arjuna here is getting a little carried away, because the Bhagavad Gita is full of instructions about devotional service. So it is mercy, actually. But as a result of hearing it, Arjuna went and killed his elders, which brought him sorrow. So all these things, Krishna is thinking, I'm being very compassionate. But what is the result? It comes out all wrong, that we end up suffering as a result of the so-called mercy. But then Arjuna says, still, he is the dearest person to me. There is no one like him. And I have full trust in him. And he gives four reasons. One, Krishna is unconditionally merciful. Two, he always fulfills his promises to his devotees, not to the non-devotees. There you never know. But to his devotees, he always fulfills his promises. And therefore, he is the most reliable friend and benefactor. That's the third point. And fourth, he is the original Supreme Lord, and he can do anything. So he is convinced of these qualities of Krishna. And therefore, when he thinks about all these wrong things that happened, it pains him very, very much. So Nakula and Sahadev, the youngest brothers, they then speak up. And they say that as far as we're concerned, we don't think that when Krishna gave us strength when we were facing difficulty, or when he destroyed our enemies, or helped us perform that big sacrifice, or gave us this big kingdom, we don't think those were expressions of his mercy. Rather, the only time he was merciful to us was when he let us worship him first at the Rajasuya sacrifice. Yeah. But now he's gone, and we can't worship him any longer as we did that time. So where is his mercy now? Yes. So you can see, they're very amazing devotees, actually. Have a meal. So Krishna, he accepted one scrap of little flake of vegetable somewhere in the pot. And they felt completely satisfied. So he saved Draupadi there. He saved her from Dushasana, who was trying to undress her. But now her father, her brother, her sons, they're all dead. They all died in the battle. And she says she doesn't really lament for that. She accepts it as his will, but still she had been hoping that he might fulfill her desires further. Yeah. Because at one time, Krishna spoke to her very pleasingly and told her, don't worry, I'll see everything works out. But everything apparently didn't work out. And now he's gone away. So where is his mercy? Then Queen Kunti spoke. Oh, another thing. Yudhisthira mentioned right at the end, he said, if you want to see some people who have some mercy, who really have the mercy, go to Dwaraka and see the Yadus. That was Yudhisthira said that. So then Kunti, overwhelmed in separation, spoke in a very pitiful voice. She said that actually Krishna showed me a lot of mercy. This is interesting. A lot of mercy. He saved me. He quickly came to protect me and my sons from so many calamities. He intervened very quickly. This is even greater mercy than he gave Devaki. Because in her case, she had to stay in prison for years. She lost her sons. They were all killed except for Krishna, maybe Balaram. Otherwise, she lost all her sons. She had to suffer in Kamsa's hands for so long. So I got more mercy than her. But now, following the battle of Kurukshetra, everyone is dead. Everyone I knew is dead. All I hear, if I listen out the window, I hear women crying and lamenting. That's all. So, I would rather we go back to that dangerous time before the battle. Of course, there is a famous verse. Vipada santu ta shashvat tatra tatra jagad goro darshan, what is that? Something or other, darshanam yatsyad apunar bhava darshanam. Yeah. She's a very famous verse in the 8th chapter of the first canto. Queen Kunti is saying that, I wish those dangers would come again and again, because then I will see your lotus feet again. And I know that when I see your lotus feet, I don't have to see repeated birth and death. So Kunti is saying that, can't we just go back to that dangerous time? That would be better. And she said, he probably thinks that we're all right now. He probably thinks that he delivered us and he got us situated in the right position. So we're fine now. So he's gone away. He thinks we don't need any more help. He's gone. And she says, I think under the circumstances, he may never come back because his family relationship with the Yadus is closer. Devaki is there. She's his mother. I'm just an aunt. The Pandavas, my sons, are just cousins. But he is there with his mother, with his wives, with his own children. Their relationship is closer. So I don't think I'm going to see him again. So I think now, Kunti says, I think now, if he wants to show some mercy on me now, let it just be in the form of a quick death. That's all. Now, you know, when we hear people say things like this, we might think, oh yes, it's a little hard to relate to. Because I don't think we've ever felt like that. Well, I don't know, but it's very unusual that people get to feel like that. But the thing is, we should understand, Queen Kunti is not just saying it. She actually feels like that. That separation from Krishna is so painful, it's intolerable, that actually it would be better to die in all seriousness. So, she says, this fact that the Yadus are more intimately related on a family basis, this is breaking the last strand of my faith that Krishna will come back, at least, that faith. So, both her then and Yudhisthira, and they are the two most senior persons, they have advised Narada to go to Dwarka. They haven't gone into great detail, they haven't gone into any detail, really. They just said it, or said that he has special family relationship with them. So Narada immediately takes off to Dwarka, flies off and lands in Dwarka. And sure enough, there he sees the Yadavas, the Yadus. Not Krishna. Krishna is there, but he doesn't see Krishna. He sees the Yadus seated, waiting for Krishna to come in the Sudharma assembly hall. They're seated in order of superiority, very meticulously. And it's a very beautiful scene with music and poetry and glorification. They're laughing and enjoying together. It's very nice. There were countless millions of them. Sanatana Goswami mentions that in the Bhagavatam it says that the Yadus employed 38,800,000 teachers for their children. In his commentary on that verse, Sridhar Swami says, this is a very conservative estimate. Anyway, the basic point is, there's an awful lot of them there, and they're waiting for Krishna to come. But Krishna is not coming. Anyway, that's another thing which we'll get to in due course of time. That's a big, big thing. Why Krishna has not come. But at this point, there are the Yadus, and they're all very happy and blissful, waiting for Krishna in the assembly hall. So they saw Narada. They ran to him. He threw himself on the ground before him. They picked him up, put him on a seat. He refused it. He insisted on sitting on the ground. They all sat on the ground with him. It was very nice. They brought paraphernalia to worship him. He took it from them and just bowed down to it and just sat there and started speaking. So he told them that you are the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy, and asked, can I have your blessings to glorify you forever? You're more glorious than the residents of Vaikuntha even. Thus this earth planet has become the most glorious place. Narada Muni starts offering prayers to the earth planet, that this is the topmost of all abodes because these Yadus are here. Because of love for you, Krishna has forgotten Vaikuntha and he's staying here. He's so deeply involved in his intimate relationships with you. He talks with you, sits with you, eats with you, sleeps with you, takes part in your marriage ceremonies. He follows you if you go walking somewhere. What an intimate connection. His connection to you is far more important than with any yogi who meditates or anyone else. And he acts with you in such ways to increase your devotion. So you've got no interest in material life, liberation. You've even forgotten your own families and possessions. And then he sees Maharaj Ugrasena, who was the king in Dwaraka. Sometimes devotees think that Krishna was the king in Dwaraka, but he wasn't. Ugrasena was. Krishna was a prince under Ugrasena. So Narada tells Ugrasena, you are the best, because Krishna comes before you like a humble servant and addresses you with reverence, asking you if you would mind considering a certain point when you make your judgment on some issue, and then offering obeisances to you and your relatives. So, the Yadavas say that how can a person as intelligent as you speak like some lowly person, glorifying people like us? But then they say, still we know from what our Lord Krishna has told you, you are so elevated that what you say cannot be untrue. So it must be true that we have mercy from the Lord. But it's probably just a slight trace. Just a slight trace. Generally, he's more merciful to helpless people who require his protection. But then they said, they were presenting themselves as very fallen, unqualified. But then they said, actually, it is a fact. we have some mercy from Krishna. But amongst us, Uddhava has the most mercy. So now this is important. They explain now why Uddhava has the most mercy. What are the symptoms? Because he is Krishna's personal advisor. His advice and comments please Krishna. There's this story we mentioned earlier about the Rajasuya sacrifice. Two invitations arrived. Well, there was one invitation to the Rajasuya sacrifice from Yudhisthira. But then there was a message, an appeal from some princesses who had been kidnapped by, I think it was Narakasura. And they were appealing for the Lord to come and intervene and save them. So these two things, Krishna didn't want to turn down, to refuse his devotee, Maharaj Yudhisthira. And he didn't want to leave his devotees, the princesses, in the hands of this horrible demon. So what did he do? He asked Uddhava. He told Uddhava, I do not know what to do. Please instruct me. So Uddhava said that this Rajasuya sacrifice means that Yudhisthira is being accepted as the supreme king of all kings, the emperor. Now, if there is this... Oh, wait a minute, we're talking about Jarasandha, isn't it? I think both things, all these things happened around the same time. Anyway, if... Now, where are we here? Is it Jarasandha? Jarasandha. If this Jarasandha is still an independent king and he does not accept Yudhisthira, then how can they have the Rajasuya sacrifice? They can't do it. So Uddhava told Krishna, therefore you should go and see that Jarasandha is killed, and then go to the Rajasuya sacrifice. So Krishna accepted, yes, this is excellent advice. And he followed that advice. So he says, they say that Uddhava is the Lord's personal advisor, his disciple, his servant, an extremely dear friend. Sometimes Krishna leaves Dwaraka, he leaves us, but Uddhava goes with him. Sometimes Krishna sends Uddhava to do missions, to carry out missions that he should really do himself. In other words, Uddhava is so empowered by the Lord. Like when Sambha was captured by Duryodhana, Krishna sent Uddhava to negotiate his release. He is present when the Lord eats and is the only person who always gets the Lord's remnants. That's an important point, isn't it? He massages the Lord's feet and falls asleep with the Lord's feet in his lap. This is a lot of mercy. When Krishna goes out for confidential business, he always takes Uddhava with him. Just like when Krishna went to visit Kubja. He knew it was going to be a sort of delicate situation. So he took Uddhava with him, just in case he needed some quick advice on the spot with this kind of unknown quantity, Kubja. Or in that dilemma of whether to fight with Jarasandha or go to the Rajasuya sacrifice. He even looks like Krishna. He is more beautiful than Pradyumna, who also looked like Krishna. Sometimes even we mistake him for Krishna. So he's got a lot of mercy. Therefore, he is the most dear of all devotees. He has the greatest mercy. You must speak to Uddhava. So Narada was just about to go deeper into the palace to find Uddhava when Ugrasena stopped him and said, you know, these things that you said about me, that the Lord comes before me very humbly and asks my permission to do things and things like that. He says, it's not like that. It's not like that. At least not like how Uddhava is close to him. It's not like that. He says, I have to beg to get the Lord's association, and still sometimes I can't get it, even though I'm the king. But Uddhava is always with him. And I have only one pleasure, that is carrying out his orders. That's all. If he ever offers respect to me, he's just cheating me, I know it. And it leaves me feeling cheated. But Uddhava is never cheated like this. He is always with Krishna. So then, Ugrasena, the chapter finishes with Ugrasena asking Narada, so you please go and meet Uddhava, and by the way, can you ask him to bring Krishna here? We've been waiting for hours, but the Lord has not come. Probably Uddhava is the only person who can bring him. So when you see Uddhava, ask him to bring the Lord, please. So that will take us into chapter 6, where things in Dwaraka really start to pick up. And chapter 7 continues in Dwaraka. Also, things reach very high levels of intensity. Any comments or questions? Question is that we have just mentioned how when different forms of the Lord appeared, different people they were involved with, and even particularly demons who they killed, didn't get liberation. But Krishna has given Lord Shiva and his wife like power of attorney to give liberation to people on his behalf, specifically. So the question is there any difference? Oh, is there any difference between the liberation? No. There's no difference between the two types of liberation. They're both impersonal liberations. Sayuja Mukti. Yeah. But the thing is that Lord Shiva, he has the special service to give liberation, given to him by Krishna. Yeah. So he is especially empowered. He's also a type of form of the Lord, in a certain sense, of a Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. But he is particularly empowered to give liberation. And the other forms of the Lord, they may not bother. It's not necessarily that they're not capable, but they may just not bother doing it. It's a good question. The question is that we've been hearing how all these different great devotees have all been saying they've got no mercy. Basically like that. But here in ISKCON, we are regularly talking about if something good happens or different things happen, how we got the mercy, and we're sort of encouraged to think like that. So what's the difference? The thing is that these great devotees, it's not that they always think that they never got any mercy. They also have their different sort of moods. Yeah, they definitely have their different moods. It's just like, you know, the Mahabhagavat. One characteristic is that they think they're the most fallen. So Srila Prabhupada, as the only Mahabhagavat, or at least, you know, at the very least, and perhaps the only, but at the very least, the supreme Mahabhagavat that any of us have had any direct experience with, that he would express himself like that, that he's a very fallen soul. There was one occasion I was reading about a little while ago. Prabhupada was with some devotees and they were glorifying him, that you're so wonderful and like this. At the end, Prabhupada said, no, actually I'm all bad, but in your association I may become good. Yeah. So that's not different from what these great devotees have been saying. But at other times, Srila Prabhupada made it very clear that he was a Mahabhagavat and that he should be, you know, people should see him like that and deal with him like that. So, you know, when these great devotees are placed in such a situation where they're glorified so much, then immediately their humility comes out, completely comes out. Yeah. And they'll express themselves like that. But at other times, when the Lord, for example, does intervene in their lives and does something, then it's not that they would think, ah, doesn't mean anything. It's not really so good. No, they'd be very appreciative. Extremely appreciative. So, but this, all of them in these situations here, they're all being confronted by Narada in a certain way, which just brings out their humility completely. Yeah. But otherwise, you know, they would be regularly aware of the mercy of the Lord and like that. Well, that's also a good question. The Lord has given these devotees so much mercy in all cases, but they're saying he's given no mercy at all. The question is, could that be an offense? Like being ungrateful? Well, the answer is that in their cases, it's not. It's not an offense. It's all part of their intimate connection with the Lord and their humility. But if we, you know, if we who are not on the same level start denying things which are mercy from the Lord and attributing them to other causes, or saying that, you know, it's useless, the Lord is not helping us, then, you know, our attitude will become one of envy towards the Lord, that he never helps me. And then we'll think, well, who needs him? So I'm going to give him up. That's what will happen to us. But all these devotees, they're thinking like this and becoming more intensely focused on the Lord. Yeah. So for them, it's not, definitely not an offense. Hare Krishna. So, see you on Monday for chapter 6. Getting a bit more thrilling. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.